Now we move to Arisak versus McCasey.
Morning again, Your Honors. David Trace, respectfully for the petitioner, Simon Arisak. There are two essential issues in this case. They're kind of simple questions. One is whether the jailing and beatings that the petitioner suffered at the hands of the government agents rise to the level of persecution. Secondly, whether those beatings and sufferings would lead to a granting of withholding of removal. It's pretty well settled in this court that one single episode of physical abuse can lead to a finding of persecution if it rises above the level of mere detention and harassment. In this case, we have a young man, 22 years old, out preaching and evangelizing, and as he says, proselytizing. While he's doing this, the police come, they arrest him, they bring him to jail, they detain him, and they beat him to the point of being unconscious. The beating included being hit with batons, being kicked, being hit, and he finally lost consciousness after being repeatedly kicked in the genitals. The next day, they released him, but they gave him another beating and a stern warning that this would happen again if he continued to proselytize, which, of course, he intended to do. He intended to continue to practice his religion. His father picked him up at jail. His father was all bruised up himself. And his father recommended at that time, you need to leave. You're making some serious threats here, and you need to go. So he was gone within 2 weeks. He had left the country. The way he left the country was he got a visa through it to Italy, and then he got into a container where he stayed for a week. So we're not talking about someone who stuck around to see what was going to happen next, and we're not talking about someone who came over on a B2 visitor visa, waited 6 months, and went from there. This was an act of desperation. In Asani versus Gonzalez...
That's interesting because he apparently didn't come to the intention of Department of Homeland Security until he was stopped in Detroit a couple of years later, right?
That's correct. He did not. And so when he was smuggled in, Your Honor, there's no denying that. And
Asani was an asylum case, and these other, I think most of these other cases you're comparing to are asylum cases. This is a withholding of removal case. Does that make any difference?
Well, it does, Your Honor. Well, here's why I cite those asylum cases, because with withholding of removal, if there's a presumption that a presumption can be established that he will be persecuted in the future if it has been held that he has suffered past persecution. So we kind of need to establish the past persecution to go along with the withholding of removal, and that's why I cite those asylum cases, because what those asylum cases say is this is persecution. In Asani, this court held that one detention that led to a beating where the person lost teeth was enough. In Asani, this court said that, you know, it was somewhat incredulous that the BIA said that this wasn't a serious enough injury in Asani. Interestingly, in this case, the immigration judge says that this person, Arisak, wasn't harmed severely enough. And I think then the question bodes to this court is, what's enough?
I don't know if that's a fair characterization. I mean, the judge did say, recognizes that a single episode can be sufficient to establish past persecution. But here he said this fellow was proselytizing 500 times and had one incident. So he put it in context and didn't find past persecution. It wasn't that he categorically said a one episode is not enough. He said this one episode in context with 500 other episodes.
Yes, Your Honor. In the context of 500 other episodes where he wasn't beaten, however, this one episode, he was beaten, and whether, I think the question goes to whether it was severe enough, because those are the words that he uses. Certainly, one episode in 500, you can say, well, that's not very much. But if that one episode is so severe, if it rises to the level of persecution, then that one episode is enough, even if the other 499 times he proselytized, the police did not do this to him. And it was enough where he felt so much fear, and his father felt so much fear for him, that he arranged for him to leave the country within 2 weeks.
You see, Judge, I think that all plays into Judge Cudahy's question about the difference between asylum and withholding of removal. It's a higher burden that you have to...
It is a higher burden, Judge. However, there is a presumption that it's more likely than not that he would be persecuted in the future if it's established that he has suffered past persecution. Hence, one must establish to ignore the chances of the applicant that they have suffered past persecution, because then there is a presumption that it's more likely or not, and it doesn't have to be proven. It's a different standard, so we have a presumption.
Would the presumption be fairly easily overcome in this case because of the changing circumstances in Romania?
Well, Your Honor, that's an interesting question, because the 04 country reports that were submitted at the time of the hearing state that lower-level government officials continue to impede efforts of proselytizing and interfere with religious activities that local police and administrative authorities tacitly supported violent societal campaigns against proselytizing. The 2006 country reports states pretty much the same thing. Local police and administrative authorities tacitly supported violent societal campaigns against proselytizing. So while there has been some change country conditions from what it was under the communist in Ceausescu, it's still, you know, there's still a lot to be done. And people are still being persecuted based upon their religion.
And now, if we agree with you and hold that this is past persecution, the case goes, that creates a presumption. As I understand it, the case then goes back and the government can then attempt to defeat the presumption, correct?
That's correct.
And at that phase, presumably the question that this is a withholding of removal case rather than an asylum case might be argued on remand. Is that right?
No, sir. The applicant here is not qualified for asylum because he failed to apply for asylum within 1 year.
Yeah, I understand that. But when we're talking about a different standard for removal of withholding of removal from asylum, that would become an issue on remand of the case, would it not?
Yes, absolutely, Your Honor. The issue on remand would be whether it would be a one-issue case, whether he should be granted withholding of removal. But before we can get there, we have to establish the past persecution.
I understand that. I'm just trying to say that's an issue for remand.
Yes,
not
sir.
Not necessarily an issue now.
Yes, sir.
Right.
And I can see I'm into my rebuttal time, but I would like to say this is like a sign. We have one severe beating, one very severe injury, one really scared individual who felt his life was within danger and ran for his life within 2 weeks after being beaten like that. He was beaten unconscious. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Ms. Williams.
May it please the court, I'm Lindsay Williams and I represent the respondent in this matter. Today, the respondent respectfully requests that this court affirm the decision of the Board of Immigration Appeals. Turning just very quickly to Mr. Irasok's asylum claim and CAT claim, I believe it's been conceded that he has waived both of those arguments. They were not challenged in his opening brief. And the immigration judge's finding that the asylum application was untimely was not challenged before the board either, so that issue was not exhausted. So, therefore, the only issue before the court today is whether or not the record compels the conclusion that Mr. Irasok is eligible for withholding of removal. And before I turn to that argument, I just want to say one quick thing, that the 2006 country report is not a part of the administrative record. It was not what was before the board and therefore should not be considered by this court. Turning to the first issue, the record does not compel the conclusion that Mr. Irasok, that his experience rose to the level of persecution as it's contemplated by the INA or this court's case law. The evidence that he relied upon or the incidents that he relied upon were that his family experienced harassment pre-1991, I believe, which was before the communist regime fell. Post the fall of the communist regime in 1992-1993, the local police searched his home and took some Bibles. Other than that, the only experience that Mr. Irasok had was his July 2002 24-hour detention where he was beaten, threatened, and released the next day. He did not require medical attention, and this is the only instance out of, I believe he testified 500 times that he had proselytized, that he was ever detained by the police.
He was beaten into unconsciousness, isn't that right?
That is correct, Your Honor. And looking at this court's case law, and again, respondent reminds the court that the standard is not, could this court find that this experience constitutes past persecution? It's, does the record compel the finding that he experienced past persecution? So looking to several of the cases in this court, we can look at Mima versus Gonzalez, where this court held that kidnapping at gunpoint, interrogation, and beating did not compel a finding of past persecution. Prela versus Ashcroft, interrogations, 24-hour detention, harassment, and a beating did not compel a conclusion of past persecution. And finally, Dan, where we had a three-day detention where the alien was deprived of food.
Dan is an interesting case, which I wrote, and I believe Judge Evans was on the panel, on which we hear a lot about.
Yes,
of course, we rejected or we upheld the government in that case because we said he hadn't explained in detail what happened to him when he was being detained. But that certainly isn't the situation here. And although it may not seem directly relevant, the Lebanese civil war had been over for more than 10 years, I think, when this fellow brought this was claiming asylum. So I'm not too sure that case has helped you as much as it might appear to.
Well, Your Honor, in Dan, first of all, Dan did deal with asylum. Therefore, we are dealing with a higher burden of proof here because we have withholding of removal. Secondly, Your Honors did point out in Dan that we need to look at the magnitude, the frequency, and the severity of the beating. And then there was much discussion about the specificity with which the petitioner described the experience that he had. And there the court distinguished both Asani and Vaduva because in Asani, the petitioner had teeth that were knocked out, and Vaduva, I believe, he had bones that were broken. But additionally, Asani can also be distinguished because in that case the board had held that there was no physical harm, and that was the reason there was no past persecution, and this court held that getting teeth knocked out, that does constitute physical harm. But turning back to Dan, looking to the specifics of the severity of the beating in this case, yes, he was knocked unconscious, but he did not require medical attention. He was released the next day. He never went to a doctor. And as far as his testimony...
I don't think he said he didn't require it. He didn't seek it anyway.
Well, whatever the case is, Your Honor, the burden of proof is on the petitioner, and he has offered up no evidence that he suffered any long-term physical damage from this other than the fact that he lost consciousness. And again, when the court looks...
I'm curious about in your earlier statements, in your earlier argument, that this court can't take any notice of the country reports that weren't introduced, if they were not introduced in evidence?
Correct, Your Honor.
Do you have authority from the cases that we decided that that's the case?
Not before me, Your Honor, but if the court would like me to brief that issue, I could. It's well-settled case law that what is part of the administrative record, and not just in the...
You're more well settled about it than I am, I guess.
Well, Your Honor, not just in the area of immigration law, but just in the area of administrative law, what is in the record? There's Supreme Court case law on this, and again, I am not astute enough to cite it to you at this moment, but would be glad to once I get back to the office. There's Supreme Court case law that clearly states that what is in the administrative record and what is before the board at the time is what is considered by the court. Many things can happen afterward, but it's what was before the board at the time, and the standard of review is, does this record right here compel?
Well, see, we've been plagued by earlier time where it took 10 years to get a case for this court and then to blindly not pay attention to what changed conditions may have occurred in the country makes absolutely no sense at all.
Well, Your Honor, on the same token, the standard of review here is whether or not there was substantial evidence before the board for the board to make the decision. It's a review in court. The review is not de novo. It's substantial evidence. And in order to do that, the court has to look at what was in the record at the time before the board. Mr. Irasak has every possibility of filing a motion to reopen, and he can argue changed country conditions before the board. That process is set up for him. But coming to this court now and introducing evidence that he didn't ever introduce before the board is not the appropriate way to approach the situation. But lucky for us, it doesn't really matter because the 2006 country report doesn't differ all that greatly from the 2004 country report, both of which show that Pentecostals in Romania are not being persecuted. Pentecostals in Romania are free, as this court has held in Bucur, are minority religious groups can practice their religion freely in Romania, as freely as they can in the United States. The only issue here is whether or not Pentecostals in Romania are persecuted when they go out and proselytize. And the 2004 country reports indicate that there is freedom of religion, that the only problem that exists is on the lower level of authorities. And Mr. Irasak stated that in every free moment that he had, he proselytized. And he said at least 500 times. And out of 500 times, one time he's arrested and has this incident with the police. So putting the country reports together with Mr. Irasak's own personal experience, also with his testimony where he said many Pentecostals proselytize, it's part of their mission as Pentecostals, there really is no evidence that Pentecostals are persecuted in Romania. And this goes to the second point, which is that the record doesn't compel that his life or freedom would more likely than not, which is the standard for withholding of removal, be threatened upon removal to Romania. Since he did not establish past persecution, he can establish that he would more likely than not be threatened upon removal to Romania if he can establish that there is an individualized risk or that there is a pattern or practice of persecution against those that are similarly situated. And he's shown neither. Again, the July 2002 incident was the only time that he personally ever had any encounters with the police. And again, he said many Pentecostals proselytized, so it's not that the police were directing this at him as an individual. And then second, there's no pattern or practice of persecution against Pentecostals in Romania, as is evidenced by the country reports and his own testimony and this court's holding in Bucur. And then finally, with turning to the issue of whether or not he would experience persecution in the future, he admitted in his testimony that his primary fear in returning is not that he's going to be persecuted while he proselytizes, but that he's going to be arrested because he left the country illegally. Further, his parents still live in Romania. He testified that they're active members of the Pentecostal Church, and they've had no incidences since he left. So, considering those things, the record doesn't compel that he would more likely than not be persecuted upon his return. And finally, when asked if he could relocate to any other part of Romania where he could proselytize without having these sorts of incidences, his response is that he did not know. He had not tried. And all of this goes into the court's analysis of whether or not this record compels the conclusion contrary to that of the Board of Immigration Appeals. My time is up, so if there are no further questions, thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Williams. Mr. Treza, you have 1 minute, Mr. Treza.
Let me ask you, what does proselytizing mean in this context?
Proselytizing in this case means trying to convert someone to your religion.
Well, how does that happen here?
I mean, how does it happen spiritually? Yeah. I don't know.
No. How does it happen? If I sit down to have lunch with Judge Keeney and I try to convert him to be a Pentecostal, that's one thing. But if I stand in front of him and start screaming that he's going to go to hell unless he becomes a Pentecostal, that's another thing. What was he doing here? When you're saying proselytizing, what did that mean?
Well, what he was doing is he was speaking to more than one person. And I believe what he was doing more was preaching and telling people that they needed to accept what he was saying if they were going to.
And how did this happen?
To heaven.
Is it standing on a street corner talking, or does he go to a hall and people voluntarily come to hear his message?
This was on the street, although he did have a position as a youth minister within his Pentecostal Elam church.
Okay.
Thank you.
We'll give you another.
I used up your time, so go ahead.
Okay, I'll be brief. Thanks. You know, we have to keep in mind, too, that this young man was found credible. Whatever his religious beliefs are, he appears to be an extremely honest young man. He said he didn't know what would happen if he went back to Romania. Who would know? You can't know for sure, although his father did write him a letter stating that the police have come to the home and are looking for him. Now, he has proselytized, preached many times without incident. However, that changed. And now they know about him. And they know who he is. They know where he lives. They know what he does. And that changes things. So you can go for the 500 times, but the one time is the time that counts. And that's what happened here. And as for losing teeth versus unconsciousness, I don't know. You know, I think they're both very, very severe. And the BIA and Asani, what they said is that he didn't suffer serious injuries. Not that he didn't suffer any. They said it wasn't serious. And so what this court said is that was serious. The IJ here is saying that it wasn't severe enough. And I'm asking this court today to say that it was severe enough, that one beating that led to the petitioner becoming unconscious was severe enough to constitute persecution, particularly because it was because of his practice of his religion. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.